You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Does the First Amendment of the Constitution cover speech in public schools? That is the question that one might ponder after the Madison, Wisconsin Metropolitan School District canceled an anti-war teach-in that had been scheduled by students for over a month. The reason cited for the cancellation was that there were no pro-war participants. The school district's actions have caused quite a stir. Chris Kroc, a host of Kroc Talk on WTDY in Madison, supports the cancellation, and Matthew Rothschild, editor of Progressive Magazine, one of the scheduled panelists for the anti-war teach-in, weighs in on this question.
I've got to say I'm astonished that this happened because I've spoken at a lot of teach-ins in public schools around this state here in Wisconsin without ever having a microphone being taken away from me. The way I understand it, the student group did invite people with differing viewpoints, that is, people who were in favor of this war against Iraq, to participate or to form their own teach-in. And they weren't taken up on that offer. So given that, it really doesn't bother me at all. And, you know, if people want to have a teach-in afterwards with another side of Express, that's great. I don't think you need to balance constantly one against the other. On the other hand, I'm all for debates, and I love debates. So if that's what happens, that's fine. But I think this really gives a bad, bad lesson to the students that, you know, their free speech rights can be taken away so fast, or that the superintendent would bow to pressure from a radio station so quickly. I mean, that tells people that, hey, our rights aren't secure and maybe it's not even worth it.
So the superintendent of schools postponed the assembly until a pro-war representative was included. But prior to that, the principal, Pam Nash, and organizers of the event had invited members of the Young Republicans to find pro-war speakers, as you said, Matthew, to participate, but they never did. So it isn't as though there was a debate or deliberate effort to exclude this viewpoint. Chris,
Yes. You
became involved in the controversy when one of the Young Republican students appeared as a guest on your show.
Yes.
How was this matter brought to your attention?
Well, let me say this, if I may address some of the things that Matthew has mentioned. First of all, it's not the radio station that canceled this event. It is Superintendent Art Rainwater, and the reason he canceled this event is because it was found to be in violation of school board policy. I'm sure Matthew would agree that teachers should never, the policy states clearly, teaching shall be free from bias. Clearly, we don't want teachers teaching with a bias. For example, what if they're, racist? We don't want them teaching with a bias, and that's a fact. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. So it was in clear violation of school board policy because this was during the school hours, the last 2 hours of the school day on school grounds. That's why it was ordered to be shut down by Art Rainwater, because it violated school policy. With regards to whether the radio station shut this event down, that's also specious as well, because the people of the community here are the ones who expressed their outrage via calling the superintendent and calling the school and emailing them. They were outraged that only one side would be taught, not only that, but during the school hour. The other thing is this, Mr. Rothschild from the Progressive claims that his microphone was taken away from him. Nobody's taking a microphone away from him. You can't do that. It violated school policy. So unless you want teachers teaching with a bias, you can't do that.
Now, was this an after-school event?
No.
And an optional event?
No, it was during the school. They are also claiming it was optional, but in fact, there were whole classes that were going to this. And what if you're a kid who supports President Bush? It's not pro-war. Nobody likes to go to war. What if you support President Bush or believe that we should do a preemptive strike on Iraq, and you're in a classroom, the whole class is going? How's that? But the students being invited is another critical point, if I may address really quickly. The Young Republicans, conservatives, whatever you'd like to call them, were not invited. What has happened is this. They've planned this out for about a month, and about a week and a half before the rally, or the teach-in, that is to say, they had found out about this and asked Principal Nash, hey, can we do a counter one? She said, that's a great idea, but nobody was ever offered. In fact, I would challenge Mr. Rothschild right now to name one person who was called and contacted, a conservative, and invited to this teach-in, because none were. And for 3 days, I've invited Ms. Nash and Ms. Calcina, the sponsors of this at the school, on my show. They won't come on. I've invited them to go to lunch with me off the record. They won't. They're not responding and everything. But I'm demanding to get a name, because they claim they contacted conservatives. They can't produce one name of one conservative they offered a slot to.
Well, Matthew, did you want to respond to that?
Well, all I can say is I saw in the paper that these both the teacher and the students were quoted as saying that they had invited representatives of the other side to give their view either at the teach-in or to form a teach-in of their own.
Well, sure, that was quoted in the Capital Times, which is a a left-leaning paper. They didn't, in that whole article you're quoting, they didn't cite one person or interview one person from the conservative side. Not only that, once again, the teachers and the administration told two different stories at the school. Number one, they said they reached out and offered a slot to conservatives, which they didn't, once again, produce a name for me. Second of all, the other problem here is they actually lied. They said, hey, we took a look at the school board policy the day before the event. We decided it wasn't in the best interest. It should be balanced. That's false. That's them covering their butt for PR spin. What actually happened is the superintendent, Art Rainwater, called and said, shut it down. It's in violation of the policy.
But what's the issue here? If, in fact, the conservative students did go to the principal and say, we want to have our own forum for a preemptive strike against Iraq, or however you want to put it, and the principal said, fine, then, you know, why don't they do their own forum a week later? I mean, I don't see that that's a problem.
Well, you can't teach with a bias, and so you can't be dragging kids in pro or con or against President Bush.
It's not dragging people in.
Well, yes, it is. When
no,
the whole,
students voluntarily can go or not go.
Yes,
and
but
if there's
some,
a teach-in now and then there's a teach-in later, they can sample both.
Well,
they'd like to come to their own conclusion.
Yeah, but Matthew, if my child is 16 and in the high school and he supports the president, why should he be forced when a whole class is taken in? There's some of these whole classes we're going to this.
Hey,
why should
I have
be forced to your propaganda?
In the high school here.
Great. Well, then,
gentlemen, I think in order for this to be a productive session, you need to let the other person finish their statement. Matthew, you wanted to respond to Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I have a 16-year-old high school student in the Madison Public School District, and last year I was invited into his high school, which was West High School, to talk about the Afghan War. And the students were allowed to go in if they wanted, and they weren't allowed, and they could choose not to go in. And
I'm talking about this time, though.
Not everyone who went in was in favor of what I was saying, and they asked me questions during, they asked me questions afterwards, and it was just part of a free exchange of ideas. One of the things that is going on here is I think that this radio station and the student who complained to them don't even want to hear the pro-peace position on this.
I really respect
it's anti-American or subversive to be opposing.
I really respect your position. I respect you. I don't think you say it's a free exchange of ideas, and I think that's wonderful. It's what our country is all about. But listen, you can't do that on school time during school grounds when it's biased towards one way. You guys should have done this right after the school, not during the school. It's in violation of school board policy. I mean, I don't see why you want to violate policy and teach with a bias.
Chris, let me ask you this. Are you opposed to the teach-in in general, or is it that you believe it should be balanced?
I believe it should be balanced, and I also think it should be after school or before school.
So you don't oppose having a teach-in?
No, not at all.
Anti-war teach-in?
No, not at all. And that's the other thing, too. Like I said, I can't repeat it enough. I mean, I've invited the teachers that are on Mr. Rothschild's side to come on my show. I've invited them to go to lunch. I mean, there's no hate here. And that's the other thing. They're throwing out terms like hate and anti-American. I never called any of these people anti-American, but they like to use these terms against people that are conservative like myself. Hate, anti-American. I never called any of those people that. In fact, we know one thing. They hate President Bush. I'll tell you this. All of them, I don't hate any of them. I'll go to lunch with you, Matt, anytime you want.
That's fine. I'd love to come on your show, too. Vernon, listen, though, I want to address one thing that Chris is saying, and that this is against school policy.
Mm-hmm.
I have since found a copy of the Student Bill of Rights that says, students shall have the privilege to plan and carry out voluntary forums, assemblies, seminars, and school programs of a political nature, so long as they don't substantially disrupt or pose a clear and present danger to school operations, and that all assemblies are voluntary unless they deal with the efficient running of the school. So,
you know, Matthew, I appreciate what you're saying, but I think that Superintendent Art Rainwater knows more about school policy and what violates what than you do. No offense intended, by the way.
Let me ask you this. Matthew, what is the political climate like in Madison around this war issue? Are voices of dissent being heard in the mainstream media?
Sure they are. I mean, Madison is a great community because there is an irreducible group of dissenters here. And we can protest almost at the drop of a hat if we find the policy of the U.S. government to be reprehensible, as I do, as relates to this coming war. So there are a lot of protests. There have been panels at the University of Wisconsin that I've attended. There was a panel at a church that I attended the other night. And so the debate here is pretty wide open, and dissent isn't squelched so much, though dissent was squelched a little bit down in Milwaukee recently when one of the big businessmen in that community had given money to a group called Not in Our Name, which is against the Iraq War, and he was forced, really, to apologize for doing that because right-wing radio stations drummed up opposition to him, and the most shameful thing of all was the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel editorialized against him. So there is a climate of what I call neo-McCarthyism around the nation. I worry that this teach-in may have a little hint of that too. Though I'm all for, you know, debating. So if they want to have a debate, great.
Well, I tell you what, Mr. Abu, I believe you're talking about in Milwaukee. I particularly, that case did not bother me enough. It's his right to do what he wants. Although, of course, he's a CEO of a big energy company, so we put his name on it. Then, of course, he's subject to criticism. But I didn't actually attack him myself, and I kind of resent that, you know, conservative right wing radio label us all, because I never attacked him. So you know, and
you but
know.
Your colleagues in Milwaukee certainly did.
Well, I don't know any of them. I've never met them. So what do you want me to do? You think we all think alike? Are you branding?
No, I'm not.
I didn't mention
you in that regard,
okay.
Chris.
Well, you talk about the voices of dissent being heard in Madison. It's definitely heard, if I may say, Verna. I am the only, and this is the truth, by the way, and not being a braggadocio, but I'm the only conservative locally in Madison. Out of two newspapers, four TV stations, 26 radio stations, I'm the only one avowed and acknowledged conservative, and I'm a threat to them in their utopia they built up here. And I respect their voices of dissent, God bless them, just don't do it on school time in violation of school policy.
Why do you feel as though an optional assembly, albeit during school time, mm-hmm. would put students in a position, an uncomfortable position?
Like I said, I'll say it again, whole classes were going to this. So that way, if you disagree with them, you're forced to go. Also, there were students getting extra credit who would go to this. So that's discrimination, too. If you support President Bush and don't want to be subjected to the propaganda, you won't get extra credit. So you reward those who go to the anti-Bush rally. You don't reward those who don't go. Let me tell you this. I've got two posters in my hand that are stamped, approved for posting by Memorial High School. Hundreds of them were up at the school, and one of them, I'm looking at right now, shows a picture of starving Iraqi children being bombed by U.S. warplanes. I've got it in my hand. It was on TV here on our local ABC affiliate. U.S. warplanes, it's a drawing, bombing starving Iraqi children and a woman holding a baby. Mm-hmm. Second of all, there's another poster I have in my hand that was passed out to the students, and it's got a picture of President Bush on it, and it calls him an anti-Muslim bigot. Anti-Muslim bigot. You got some of the far-right people, you know, attacking, like Falwell and stuff, attacking Muslims. President Bush has said they're peace-loving people. I am disgusted by our children getting exposed to calling my president an anti-Muslim bigot. I am disgusted by drawings of U.S. warplanes bombing, starving Iraqi children. I'm disgusted. That's disgusting.
You don't think that U.S. warplanes
that should not be hanging
bombing.
Up in our schools. That's disgusting. It's not happening.
Matthew?
Well, certainly students in the United States should have the right to criticize the President of the United States. That shouldn't be a problem.
How is he a bigot? How is he a bigot? Tell me that.
They have a right to say he's a bigot or not. I mean, criticizing the President of the United States criticizing him is the most protected area of free speech in this country. This gets to a major point, which I think that Chris really objects to the content of the teaching rather than the question of balance.
No.
I mean, and also, the thing that really disturbed me wasn't the posters that are there, though I would not call President Bush an anti-Muslim
Thank you.
Bigot. On
Thank
the other
you.
Hand, I would say that U.S. bombs are going to kill starving Iraqi children. I got no problem with that whatsoever.
Okay, well, I'm looking at a picture. Listen, let me just say this, Verna. I'm looking at, and Matthew, I'm looking at a picture of this poster. Matthew, have you seen it, by the way, the one I'm talking about?
I haven't seen it.
Okay, listen, I'm being honest with you here. I'm looking at, there's two children, and their ribs are showing, and then there's a mother holding a little baby, and then right above them are three warplanes, one for each of them, dropping bombs right on them. Now, obviously, Matthew, you know that nobody in the military would intentionally, knowingly, and willingly sit there and drop bombs directly on starving children, and you know that to be a fact, unless somebody was a maniacal murderer, like Saddam Hussein,
well,
by the way.
Saddam
Hussein.
We heard you the first time, Chris.
What I do know.
Sorry, I don't mean to offend anybody that likes Saddam.
No, what I do know, Chris, is that the U.S. Pentagon, in 1991, we published internal documents from the Pentagon here at the Progressive Magazine that showed that the Pentagon knew that by imposing economic sanctions on Iraq and by ruining their sanitation system,
there
would be outbreaks of epidemics that would kill hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of children.
Well, that did
happen.
In fact, I believe that there were some facilities where children and hospitals throughout the bombing of Afghanistan, where children were killed and they were just written off as collateral damage.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. Maybe people would rather have the Taliban in power back in there in Afghanistan where women can't show their faces, where women can't wear nail polish, where women have to black out their windows, and people are murdered for their beliefs, and if you're gay, you're killed. I mean, I don't know what you guys want better, but I'll tell you what. The people of Afghanistan are much freer than they were, and God bless America for what we've done. And you know what? I've never called anybody an anti-patriot. You know what I mean? Matthew, I swear to God, I don't know. You know, one thing that upsets me is don't blend me in with anybody who may be an extremist from whatever side. You know, just because I'm a conservative doesn't mean that the typical label that you guys like to put on us. I don't appreciate that. And I tell you this, I welcome you along with the other side, the conservative side, doing a thing at the same time, teaching at the same time after school hours. I really do. I welcome that, and I look forward to
but
it.
I might
be able to be a part of it, too. I don't know. We'll see how it goes here, but I welcome that.
Matthew?
No, that would be fine by me.
Good.
But I don't think there's a problem if it's voluntary during school hours. I do have a problem on free speech grounds with what happens to some of these posters that Chris is talking about. According to the article I read in the paper, I wasn't in the hallway, so I can't vouch for
right.
it.
Right. I have the
According
yeah.
to the article, these posters were torn down both by students and by teachers, and if it's an approved poster, that is really trampling on people's free speech.
Could we put a poster up of Saddam Hussein raping and torturing women or killing people? Could we put up a poster of Saddam Hussein putting a hit out on President Bush Sr.? Could we put out a poster of Saddam Hussein gassing innocent Iraqi people?
Sure, I'm all for that, Chris.
Okay, well, look, here's the fact of the matter. I guess I could just ask you, I mean, do you find it appropriate? You obviously agree that you don't find it appropriate to have a Bush poster with calling him an anti-Muslim bigot.
No, I didn't say anything. I think it's appropriate to have that there, that it's legal and it's part of our free expression. It's part of our First Amendment protections. It's not the language I would use.
Right, because it's hateful, right? Calling him an anti-Muslim bigot?
It's hateful, but more than that, I don't think it's accurate.
How much they hate. They hate the president.
Well, I mean, you can hate the president and his actions, and you can express that through speech, and that's great. That's what our system's supposed to protect.
Matthew Rothschild, editor of Progressive Magazine, and Chris Kroc of WTDY Radio in Madison, Wisconsin. Jerry Quickly of KPFK Los Angeles spoke to comic strip illustrator David Reese about his new book, Get Your War On, and the origins and motivations of his anti-war comic strip.
I started making this series of cartoons, Get Your War On, late one night just over a year ago. It was actually the evening of October 9th, which was about 48 hours after we started bombing Afghanistan in the opening salvo of Operation Enduring Freedom. I had never made a satirical cartoon before or considered myself much of an activist or a political artist. But it was late at night and I had had a few bourbon whiskeys and I was sitting at the computer making some apolitical and sort of nonsensical cartoons when I was just overwhelmed with a sense of absurdity as to what I was doing. And I decided if there was ever a moment or ever a time in my life when I should try to make a cartoon that actually expresses how I'm feeling or which actually reflects the state of affairs in the world around me, now is the time. And so I just took a few pieces of public domain clip art and started making a series of cartoons kind of based on all the anxieties that I had been feeling over the past few days, and then more generally over the past month after September 11th.
Now, one of the things I think that's really interesting about the work is, and I just found out today, that it's actually used public domain clip art of these kind of office scenes of people talking in offices and write in your own text, and there's the cartoon as a And it's very effective because the public domain clip art is these kind of very sterile, very serene, very office settings and environments. It looks very innocuous and
right.
very sterile.
Right.
And then the text itself is just this these broad, sweeping, harsh indictments of the government and what it's up to, including a lot of righteous indignation and anger. And that's one of the things I really like about your work is that it actually goes there, calls a spade, and it speaks with a degree of moral conviction and authority that you don't often find in many illustrators' work.
Yeah, well, the whole reason I started making the cartoon, it was actually – there were a number of reasons, but one of the most specific ones was that According to some reports I had read, it seemed like us bombing Afghanistan last fall was going to lead to a potential a devastating humanitarian catastrophe. And Oxfam International at the time was predicting a worst-case scenario of hundreds of thousands of Afghans starving to death. Not all as a result of the bombing campaign. They certainly had plenty of problems before we showed up. But, you know, indirectly, we would just be exacerbating this catastrophic state of affairs. And I was so frustrated that I couldn't find any reflection of this simple fact, I guess, in the mainstream media or in the entertainment or anything like that. And the frustration was so great that when I decided to make a cartoon about it, I just decided to use a barrage of profanity to kind of just get all this stuff off my chest, and the extreme language kind of plays against the really banal and sterile look of the clip art characters that are saying these words. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the reasons that it got forwarded around the internet and why people took notice of it. Because when you just scan it, when you look at it, just at the pictures, there's no real information, there's no story or anything. But when you actually invest in the comic by reading it, you kind of see that the language is sort of, you know, really extreme and angry.
Yeah, there's a tension created between
the
language of the text and the images themselves.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So.
And what about what's the story with the who you choose to go after, so to speak, in these things? What makes you focus in on? I think one line is whether or not Dick Cheney, when he cries, if it's actual. If it's distilled oil or petroleum that comes from his eyes, or what makes you pick your target, so to speak?
You know, it really depends. Last fall, I wasn't thinking consciously about who I was going to go after or what political agenda I was going to promote. I really just wanted to see some expression of these obvious and dark truths outside of my head. I just wanted to read them instead mm-hmm. of just thinking about them or talking about them with my friends. And then as the year went on, I guess the scope of the strip kind of broadened, like you said, and it started covering other things like Enron more recently Kissinger. And I usually just do it when I'm upset about something or really frustrated. And so it's not like I have a list of administration officials and I have to make fun of each one like once a month and check them off. It's more just a really intuitive – it's more of an intuitive process, because at this point I kind of just look at I look at Get Your War On more as my journal or my diary rather than as a satirical or political statement. Mm. And so it's kind of just when I have – if I have some free time or if I read a newspaper article that particularly enrages me, I'll make a cartoon about it. Or if Dick Cheney just gives me the creeps – I'll make mention of that.
Yeah, and it ends up in your work.
Yeah.
Well, it's a beautifully twisted diary. That's for certain.
Right.
what kind of information do you get in order to do this? I mean, you just kind of sit there absorbing what comes through mainstream media? Do you have alternative media sources? I mean, because I think in many ways the work that's included in Get Your War On is a great alternative media source, and one that's really needed right now in this time of a impending war and active
right.
war.
Well, I think actually most of the stories, or most of the, I guess what you would call the backup or the supporting documentation for the stuff I talk about is, it's in the New York Times. I don't have a system of underground moles who are feeding me the latest information on Halliburton and its contract to build prisons in Guantanamo Bay, or the fact that the State Department wanted to dismiss a human rights lawsuit that was brought against ExxonMobil in Indonesia. Like, I just read that stuff in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. But personally, my mailbox at home is – I subscribe to a wide range of ideological magazines, which means that my junk mail is extremely interesting because – it's everything from the really left-wing magazines to the really right-wing magazines, and I really just kind of pick and choose. When it comes to the strip, I just kind of pick and choose whatever seems to be affecting me emotionally.
Mm-hmm. Now, and in this right now, and there's all these folks they're doing some really great work out in the world in terms of cartoonists and illustrators and and in the same business as you are, so to speak, whether it's Eric Drucker or Aaron Magruder, you know, and of course Doonesbury, the wonderful Olin Staple, and to the more, but yours really kind of crosses a gap, kind of crosses a bridge, in my opinion. It really, you know, the what I read in the intro is really accurate. It crosses the bridge between like Doonesbury and South Park in some ways. It's not as raucous, you know, or as garish in some ways as South Park, but certainly the level of humor and the vibrancy of it, the anger in it is kind of halfway between those two worlds. Where does that come from with you as an artist?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it was when I started making it, it was not a deliberate undertaking. It was really intuitive and personal. And I always tried over the past year to kind of stay true to that initial night's work. Because it was so rewarding and cathartic for me. And since I'm not going through a newspaper editor or a syndicate, I've always just had the luxury of letting this comic strip be whatever I want it to be. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, I guess if you want to extend the journal analogy, it's like sometimes in your journal you're really serious or whatever, and sometimes you're goofing off. And I always just wanted it to be whatever was on my mind or whatever was, you know, tightening a knot in my stomach.
Kind of giving yourself the freedom to write whatever came to
you. Yeah, right, exactly, exactly.
As opposed to having a purpose or agenda in mind for it.
Yeah, totally, because if I wanted to actually make a coherent and convincing anti-war or anti-imperialist or whatever kind of statement, I don't think I would choose the medium of profanity-laden clip art cartoon characters. You know, like I would write a letter, a well-reasoned and civil letter to the editor or something like that, you know?
Well, Get Your War On is really an impressive book. It's tremendously funny. And like I said, what I really like about it, what makes it stand out for me, is the righteous indignation and the insistence that something is very wrong and we're not supposed to pretend that it's not and be very civil as we drink tea.
Right.
We can actually, you know, give people to the right to resist and to slur the people that are murderers and killers and looking to expand their murderous empires.
Yeah.
It's a tremendous achievement. I'm really thank you so much for joining us on the show today. And I'm also really happy to know that the royalties from the book are going to be donated to the landmine relief efforts in Afghanistan. That's tremendous.
Yeah, I should just mention that's being coordinated by Adopt a Minefield, which is a great humanitarian organization in New York City. So that if you buy Get Your War On, you won't be fattening my pockets, but you will be helping out the hardworking men of Mine Dog and Detection Center, Team Number 5, who are working long hours, obviously, in western Afghanistan, removing both landmines and then some of the unexploded cluster bombs that we have recently dropped on them. Mm-hmm. So it's a really good cause.
And what's your website address?
The easiest way to look at these comics online is to go to getyourwaron.com.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, David Reese.
Thank you.
Jerry Quickly of KPFK in Los Angeles speaking with comic strip illustrator and author David Reese about his new book, Get Your War On. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias, and our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA, Lucy Murphy, Ingrid Drake, and Matt Bradley. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Special thanks also to our consulting producers, Larry Binsky and Sam Husseini. Copies of this program can be ordered from the Pacifica Radio Archives by visiting their website at PacificaArchives.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for listening.